A few years ago, an idealistic 24-year-old teacher named Erin Gruel stepped into her first classroom in Long Beach, California. She came from a relatively privileged background, and she's white. Her students at Woodrow Wilson High School were black, Hispanic, and Asian. Virtually all of them had been called unteachable. When Gruel asked them to keep a diary, she hardly could have guessed what they'd write.
Dear Diary, I always thought that odd was a three-letter word, but today I found it has seven, and they spell Gruel. My freshman English teacher is way out there. I wonder how she got this job. The administrator should have known better than to give her this class, but I guess she didn't know any better than to take it. How is she going to handle four classes full of this school's rejects? Most people at this school doubt that we can even read or write. She probably drives a new car, lives in a three-story house, and owns like 500 pairs of shoes. It seems to me that she belongs across the hall with the distinguished scholars. Yeah, she would fit in nicely there. She and the supposedly gifted white kids who think they're better than everybody else. We all know she's going to treat us like everyone else has. The worst part is, I'm pretty sure she thinks she's the one who's going to change us.
Erin Gruel knew that her students hated her, and she could see that many of them hated each other. But then something remarkable happened. She broke through to them. She made them keep diaries, and the experience changed their lives. Several years later, Gruel turned their journal entries into a book called The Freedom Writer's Diary. She also arranged for Zlata Filipovic to visit them in Long Beach. Zlata's the girl from Sarajevo who published her own diary about living in a war zone. Judith Strasser talked with Gruel and two of her former students, Sonia Pineda and Darius Garrett. Gruel says the turning point that first year came when she intercepted a note with a racist caricature.
The note was symbolic to me of just the sheer intolerance these students had for one another. And because it was on the cusp of the Rodney King riots, there was a lot of racial tension within Los Angeles. It was a very explosive situation where any type of tension could ignite a riot or fights within the classroom. And there was a young man who had transferred into my class who was a disciplinary transfer from his previous high school. And the situation was that he'd had an incident with his former English teacher that led to him bringing a gun to school and him being expelled. And it turned out that it was only a plastic water gun, but it looked like a real gun, and it caused the school to bring in the police and German shepherds, and it caused such a scene that the school would not accept him back. So I was the very next English teacher that he had, and there was a lot of animosity towards English and a lot of animosity towards me. So one day when the tables turned and the students were picking on him, it should have been poetic justice. It should have been irony that all of a sudden the class was galvanizing against him because he had been such a troublemaker from day one. But there was something inside of me that felt sorry for him, and I saw this tough facade that he had created crack, and I saw his lips quiver, and it looked like he was going to cry. And he was ironically the one that was always trying to make me cry as the teacher. And all of a sudden, the big bully was on the verge of tears.
And this was because the note was a caricature of him
that accentuated very crude lips, very large lips. And in that nanosecond, it reminded me of a note that I'd seen that a Nazi propaganda artist had drawn during the Holocaust, where they made the Jews look like rats with very long noses. And in that nanosecond, it just terrified me that this is where this note could lead to. And so initially, I started yelling at the students, and I was really ashamed that they were all laughing rather than standing up for him. And when I asked the class who had heard of the Holocaust, I was horrified that not one student in the class had heard of the Holocaust. And at the time, these students were in high school, had history classes, and I would have assumed that they would have known in the 1990s what that subject matter was. And to my horror, they did not.
So you gave them Anne Frank's diary to read?
Yes.
Sonia, I wonder if you could tell me what, first of all, what you thought it was going to be like to read this diary, and second of all, what it was like.
Getting the diary actually was a pretty scary sight. That diary, I don't know if you have ever seen it. I'm sure you have, but it's a pretty thick diary. And it was definitely intimidating, personally, because I had never read a book quite that thick before. But I was expecting, I had learned to trust Miss Gruel just a little bit, just enough to get me started on that book. I didn't know exactly what to expect, just because Anne Frank was so different from us. She did happen to be our same age, but she lived in a totally different country. She spoke a different language. She was a totally different person from us, or so we thought, because later, as we got more into the book, we realized that we really were two and the same. I mean, Anne Frank was 15, just like we were 15. She was facing prejudice, just like we were. She was facing violence. She couldn't even go out of her attic, and sometimes we couldn't even go out of our house. And it was very eye-opening to be able to commiserate with someone who had lived 50 years prior to ourselves.
I could see how it would be relatively easy, maybe, for a young woman to identify with Anne Frank. But Darius, how did you relate to Anne Frank and to her story?
Well, really, to tell you the truth, the way that I related to her is that I used the factor that they were in a time of war and in a time of crisis. And within my life, I was pretty much within my own war and crisis. I had took that and read the book, and the book pretty much was like a personal soap opera to me. It made me want to read more and read more, which made me want to go to the library and do more research on Anne Frank and what happened after the fact, because when the diary ends, you'll know that it doesn't end, you know, with her going to the camps. It just ends with them, you know, leaving the attic. So I just went on and went to the library, and I started reading more and finding out more things, and I came back to class happy, you know, letting Miss Gruel know that I found out all this different information. And it made me feel good inside because I felt smart. I felt like I did something productive. And Miss Gruel praised me for that, and that made me feel real good inside.
Aaron, when you assigned all of the kids in your class to write their own diaries, is that right?
Yes. I wanted to emulate Anne Frank and Zlata Filipovic, the young girl from Sarajevo. Mm-hmm. And like Darius said, many of the students felt that they too were living in a war and actually claimed it was an undeclared war, that although tanks were not roaming through the streets of Long Beach, that there was death permeating the streets, there was destruction, and there was a loss of innocence. And so as writing had been cathartic for both Anne Frank and Zlata, I thought what a great way for these students to purge the problems that they had at home and do something that was therapeutic. So originally we were going to do an anonymous diary in class that eventually evolved into our novel, The Freedom Writer Diary.
When you say an anonymous diary, students would hand in their diary pages and there would be no name on them, is that?
Yes. Initially what we decided to do is, in order to protect their anonymity and to protect their stories, realizing that once we opened Pandora's box, anything and everything under the sun would come out of these students. Issues such as molestation, parents doing drugs, brothers and sisters in gangs, that would be really scary, or students would have the temptation to embellish. So we figured that if we gave them a number, we allowed them to type their stories rather than use a piece of paper and a pen, that the stories would come out more freely, because it wouldn't be a situation where they would fear that I would go to their families, that the cops would get involved. And at the same time, it created this sense of uniformity, that each of the students had this universal story to tell, but they felt safe, they felt protected. And slowly the room 203 became our attic. It became the safe haven where they could write their feelings on a piece of paper and then transfer that piece of paper onto a computer.
I'm curious, did you correct these diaries for grammar and spelling?
Mm-hmm. Yes and no. What ended up happening is we used the diaries as a model of grammar and spelling, but the content to me was more important. I feel that if you stagnate the writing process by having those P's and Q's and dotting the I's and dotting the T's, it takes away the creativity. And so then what we would do is we would take these stories that were typed, and then I would mass Xerox them. When we would read them in class, we would share them. Oftentimes it would start a chain reaction where students would hear a story or read a story that needed to be edited, and they would run out of the room crying. There was one story in particular about a young girl who had been molested by her grandfather. And I read it to all 150 of my students. And inevitably, in each class, young girls would leave the classroom crying, which led to us creating a woman support group after school where we brought in a counselor. And it was amazing that within the confines of this classroom of 150 students, dozens of young women had been affected by the story. Either they themselves had been molested or knew someone in their family or just wanted to be there to support their fellow friends who'd gone through this. And it was an incredible cathartic moment where all of a sudden someone who felt alone and felt trapped realized that their story was not something that was singular, but was shared by others.
I wonder, Sonia and Darius, whether you would be willing to read maybe a couple of paragraphs from one of each of your entries in the diary.
Actually, we can't read from our own entries. We can choose a random story within the book, but we're bound by contract not to reveal who wrote which story.
Ah, okay. Well, how about you, Darius? What would you like to read?
Darius is going to read a story about a letter that was sent to Zlata Filipovic to invite her to meet the students. And this letter was sent to this Sarajevan refugee in the hopes that she would come and visit our class after we read her book.
Dear Zlata, they say America is the land of the free and the home of the brave. But what's so free about a land where people's getting killed? My name is Tommy Jefferson from Wilson High School in Long Beach, California. I am a 15-year-old teenage boy whose life seems to be similar to yours. In your diary, you say you watched out for snipers and gunshots, and I watched out for gangsters and gunshots. Your friends died of gunshots, and my friend Richard, who was 15, and my cousin Matthew, who was 19, also died of gunshots. The strange thing is, my country is not in war, or is it? My close friend Richard was shot in the heart by a carjacker who was trying to steal his mom's car. He died in his mom's arms. His final words were, "I love you." He died on December 8, 1995, just a couple of weeks before Christmas. When I saw her at Christmas, I didn't know what to say. What could I say to a mother whose son just died? My cousin Matthew was shot 5 times in the head by a Mexican gang on February the 8th, 1996. Matthew was simply walking home when a van full of gangsters pulled him into their car, drove him down the railroad tracks, beat him up, and then shot him repeatedly in the head. I hurt. It's painful when I think about his death. 2 people who I cared about died a senseless death exactly 2 months apart. Neither of their deaths was recognized in the newspapers. Sometimes I want to take a gun and get revenge. But what would that prove? Would it prove how much I cared about them? Would it prove that I stuck up for them? No. The only thing it would prove is how dumb I am, and I'm not dumb. The main reason I'm writing this letter to you, Zlata, is because I know you've been in this kind of situation. Your experience moved me and made this big football player cry, and I usually don't cry. So please tell me, Zlata, how should I handle a tragedy like this? Now that I read your book, I'm educated on what's happening in Bosnia. I would like the opportunity now to educate people on what is happening in America, because until this undeclared war has ended, I am not free. Your friend, Tommy Jefferson.
Sonia, was there a single thing in the 4 years that really stands out in your mind as having changed you or been the most important?
Definitely. For me, the most important factor in my changing was our sophomore year, Miss Gruwell did this crazy thing. It was called the Toast for Change. And as soon as I walked into the classroom, I noticed that all the chairs were up against the wall and they were in a circle and there was little champagne glasses. And I was kind of wondering what this crazy lady was doing because we were used to her antics, but this one was kind of new. And she passed out the champagne and she told us that we were going to toast for change.
Real champagne?
No. The fake Martinelli's kind.
Apple juice.
Okay.
So as we were standing there with fake champagne, she explained to us that this was our second chance. This was our second opportunity to prove everyone wrong, even ourselves wrong, because most of us didn't believe in ourselves and let alone believe in her. But when she did that for me, it changed my entire view of her, of my peers, of everybody. And as I looked around the classroom, it was actually the first time that I saw many of the guys crying. And it was the first time that we actually had cried as a class. It was amazing just to see that everyone wanted to change. Everyone felt like they had been written off. Nobody really felt like they had ever been given that second opportunity, because some of us don't come from the best background. So to be given a second opportunity is a blessing.
Sonia Pineda and Darius Garrett took Aaron Gruel's classes for 4 years. Judith Strasser talked with them and their teacher. Remarkably, all 150 of the Freedom Riders at Wilson High School in Long Beach went on to college. Since then, they've come out with a book called The Freedom Writer's Diary.